Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Massachusetts hospitals have long been international leaders in transplant medicine.
Just yesterday, 30-year-old Mitch Hunter was approved for a rare face transplant at the Brigham and Women's Hospital, the same hospital where in 1954 the world's first successful kidney transplant was performed.
And it was also in Boston where the first standardized definition of brain death, used to determine when a patient can become an organ donor, was created by a Harvard team in 1968.
And updated versions of that standard have been used in organ donation procedures ever since.
But the problem is, by limiting donors to patients who are completely brain dead, the number of organ donors has remained tiny in comparison to the need.
So a growing number of New England hospitals are considering a new approach, one that doesn't require waiting until the donor is brain dead. Instead, organs can be donated after what's called cardiac death.
But what exactly that means isn't clear, and it raises some ethical, emotional, and medical questions. Specifically, when does death start? So organ donations and the changing definition of death, that is today's talker on Radio Boston. Joining us now to tell us her family story about organ donation after cardiac death is Carrie Casey. Welcome to Radio Boston, Carrie.
Thank you.
So thank you so much for being here.
Sure.
Just tell us how it is that you and your family arrived at having to make a decision about organ donation.
Sure. My story started about 10 years ago. It started on a Friday night. I was going out with my mom and a couple of aunts shopping. And my mom was behind the wheel of the car, and we got into a terrible car accident. At the scene, I just had a scratch on my neck from my seatbelt, but my mom was unconscious and had suffered a devastating head injury. She was actually brought to a trauma center in Boston where she underwent hours of surgery while my family waited. And after many hours, the surgeons came out to tell us that her prognosis was very grim, even after all their efforts. So we spent the weekend at the hospital with my mom, hoping to see some improvement, but all the tests were showing that things just weren't going in that direction for her. We were actually educated about brain death, and we were told that my mom might be heading in this direction.
Carrie, I'm sorry to interrupt, but can I ask, so you say she was heading in that direction, meaning so she wasn't completely brain dead according to the very strict definitions of it. What were her other injuries or the extent of her, how much she was hurt?
Well, what had happened with her head injury is they put her through testing, and these tests showed that though she was not brain dead, she had a very... there was no hope for a meaningful recovery, really. She had just very little blood flow in her brain. And once we understood that, we understood that there was no hope for my mom to survive. And at that point, my family had decided that it was really time to just let her go, and we wanted to withdraw support from her. We were then introduced to a gentleman from the New England Organ Bank named Alan, and he was a family services coordinator, and he introduced us to this topic of donation after cardiac death and told us that this was something that my mom could potentially be a candidate for, that she could potentially donate her organs, some of her organs.
Had she talked about being an organ donor before?
No. Unfortunately, my mom worked in the medical field for over 20 years, but it wasn't a topic that we had spoken about. But once we gave it some thought and knew what a giving person my mother was, we knew that she would just really want to give if it was possible, especially to give life to somebody or to people. So we were educated about donation after cardiac death. We were told there were no guarantees. My mom had to die within 60 minutes in order for her to donate her organs so that the organs would still be viable for transplant.
And I'm sorry to interrupt again,
sure.
But when you say, for people who aren't familiar with this procedure, when you say that your mom had to die within 60 minutes, that's within 60 minutes of removing the support?
That's correct, okay. Removal of the vent. So, you know, that was something we had to think about, and we thought it was something that she would really want to at least try to do to give her the opportunity to give life. We were also told that if she did expire within that time frame, that our goodbyes to her at that point would be very, very quickly, because they would need to get her to the operating room to recover organs.
How quickly?
Pretty much when her heart stopped, it was our understanding that we would have to do very quick goodbyes and leave the room so that she could
within
give
minutes?
Her organs. Yes, absolutely. Within probably less of a minute. Mm. But my family thought that we were, after giving it thought, we knew that it was something that we wanted to do. We felt as though we had been saying goodbye to her for that weekend. And if she could give, then we wanted her to do so.
Your mom was just 49?
Yes. Yeah, she was. And she was a young 49.
And so when your family decided that this is what you wanted to do, do you mind if I ask, what was it like at the moment when support was removed and you were there with her?
Sure. So the staff at the hospital, you know, removed the vent and then had us come in. And I come from a very big family, but we had probably about 8 or 10 of us in her room as we stood over her and said our goodbyes. And within about 20 minutes, her heart stopped, and we very quickly gave her the last kiss, the last goodbye, and let her on her way. It was very peaceful. It was very comforting. It was silent. We really just prayed over her and stood around her and really thanked her for being everything that she was to us for the 49 years she was here.
Mm-hmm. And this was 10 years ago now.
Right.
And in the many years that have passed since you've experienced this, what are your thoughts about organ donation after cardiac death? I mean, because according to the other definition of her being, your mother being eligible after brain death, she wasn't technically brain dead.
No, she wasn't. We waited for her to die of a cardiac death. You know, at the time, I didn't really know any difference to my family. It was that she was able to give her organs after she was dead. It didn't matter if it was by brain death declaration or a cardiac death. For my family, and still to this day, we have felt a lot of comfort and peace knowing that she was able to be an organ donor. We are very grateful and thankful that the hospital and the staff there really opened this opportunity to us, because like I had said, it wasn't anything we would have thought of or that we had talked about as a family in the past.
Hmm. Well, Carrie, if you stick with us for just a minute, I want to introduce two more voices into this conversation.
Thank you,
by the way, for sharing your story with us today. Also sitting right next to you are Dr. Francis Delmonico. He is the medical director of the New England Organ Bank and the director of educational activities for the Transplantation Center at Massachusetts General Hospital. Dr. Delmonico, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
And also with us is Dr. Darshak Sanghavi. He is Chief of Pediatric Cardiology at the UMass Medical Center, author of A Map of the Child, A Pediatrician's Tour of the Body. And he also wrote an article in the New York Times Magazine called When Does Death Start? It's about organ donation after this definition of cardiac death. Dr. Sanghavi, welcome to you.
Good to be here.
So, Dr. Delmonico, let me ask you, we heard Carrie's story. Tell us in more specific detail, what really the difference is here between seeing someone as eligible for organ donation when they're brain dead versus cardiac death. I guess, what is the specific definition of cardiac death in this case?
So going to the brain death, and that definition entails someone having a devastating brain injury in which there's now an absence of brain function, and it is the entire brain, not only the cerebrum, your consciousness and receptivity, but the brain sits on a stem, the brain stem, and in that location anatomically is the control of your breathing spontaneously. Mm. When someone is brain dead, Magna, their cerebral function is lost irreversibly, and they are no longer able to breathe spontaneously. One can also be determined to be dead by an absence of circulation and breathing, the circulation being absent permanently, not to be resuscitated, recovered, resumed. And that's a more traditional way of determining someone to be dead, that there's an absence of circulation and breathing.
So I guess the wrinkle or the complication here is that the definition of brain death is so precise, as you've mentioned, that there can be cases in which a patient, as we heard with Carrie's mother, who was severely injured, virtually brain dead, but doesn't fit all the criteria. There's some physical responses.
So what is that? The usual circumstance of that makes it for, as what been with Carrie's mom, that she's not brain dead is that she may be taking a breath spontaneously so that the brainstem function remains, even though the cerebrum is injured and its function is irreversibly lost. The fact that their person is not brain dead is by the continuation of someone breathing spontaneously on their own, and that's an absolute requirement for someone to be determined brain dead.
And if they don't meet that requirement, they can't be an organ donor.
If they don't meet that requirement, they can't be determined to be brain dead and have that as the entree to organ donation. But as you've heard, other way of determining someone to be dead is by an absence of circulation and breathing. Mm. And under that circumstance, can enable organ donation to occur as well.
Listeners, we're talking about organ donation after cardiac death versus what you just heard Dr. Francis Delmonico describe as brain death. And this issue about when does death start and the whole world of organ donation. What are your thoughts on this? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK, especially if your family's dealt with this issue or maybe you've been the recipient of an organ. How do you think we should be defining death when it comes to organ donation? Again, our number is 1-800-423-8255. Dr. Sanghavi, as we heard Carrie describe, it seems like the whole procedure surrounding organ transplantation when it comes to definition by cardiac death is much accelerated versus brain death, that the family may have just minutes to decide, minutes to say goodbye, first of all. I mean, is that the case?
Correct.
And why is that?
So I think that when you talk about organ donation, we all have to accept that we're dealing with something of a paradox, which is that in our country, you can't donate your organs until you're dead. But then again, you know, you need to find a body that's dead but actually has live organs. And so to some extent, we've sort of agreed that these individuals are dead if your brain doesn't work or if your heart's not beating. Now, if your brain's not working and that's a brain dead donor, those organs, they're still getting blood from the heart. You know, the rest of the body's working just fine. So those organs can be transplanted without any damage. On the other hand, if the brain is still working a little bit, then we need to wait for the heart to stop. And the minute the heart stops, the blood turns acidic and those organs start being damaged. And every minute that you wait, those organs are being damaged a little more. And that's why every minute counts and you need to say the goodbyes quickly if that's what a family chooses.
Mm. And is the reason why the medical establishment started considering cardiac death as an alternative definition of death here because there were so many people who were passing away that could have been organ donors and ended up not being organ donors, Dr. Sanghavi?
So it turns out that actually most people that are brain dead, actually my impression is that most of them choose to donate their organs. They feel that's something they'd like to do. The sense is that actually we've become safer. You know, people just don't get head injuries as often as they used to. You know, we wear our seatbelts, we wear our, bike helmets and so forth. And so in addition to that, we have all this medical technology that keeps you alive without, to many families, having meaningful life. And so what donation after cardiac death does is allow those families that are willing and want to see some other end to that person's life who's a loved one, a way for them to donate those organs when their really meaningful life is ended.
I would like to stress, however, that the person is dead and the determination of death is done by someone independent of the transplant group, and it's done by a uniform determination of death act that says if someone's circulation, done by heartbeat, if someone's circulation is irreversibly absent, permanently absent, and the person is no longer breathing, that is a traditional way of determining death. Mm. And in this circumstance, it's done in which there is futile treatment being withdrawn. The condition of the person is one with a devastating injury, brain injury, but they're not brain dead. And yet the opportunity, the possibility of recovery is lost. And so the determination of death is occasioned by the permanent absence of circulation and breathing.
So futile in terms of how doctors may see the case. I mean, obviously, families have to agree that it is also futile. And I also wonder, I understand that the procedure, the standard is that the heart has to have stopped beating for 5 minutes, that 5 minutes have to elapse without any sort of recurrence of any kind of heartbeat before death has been declared. And as you say, death is being declared, but 5 minutes, it seems almost sort of arbitrary. Dr. Sanghavi wrote in his article that some doctors are saying you should push it down to 3 minutes or even 1 minute.
So what's the principle? The principle is that there should be the determination of a permanent loss of circulation, that the heart will no longer be resuming function. So there's a period of time to witness this, independent of the transplant individuals, independent of any other issues, rather than is this person dead by circulation that will no longer resume itself spontaneously, and by the way, there is no intention to resuscitate. So there is a period of witnessing those facts to unfold. And with that done, someone is declared dead in a very traditional way, that there is a permanent absence of circulation. So this period of time of 5 minutes is done to give an assurance to the family and to the healthcare professionals that circulation will not resume spontaneously. And by the way, it was well-intentioned that it shouldn't be because of the injury of this person.
Let's get a call in here. Sue is calling from Swampscott. Welcome to Radio Boston, Sue.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. My question for the speakers is that I'm just wondering about any comments on whether or not they think that medical professionals or healthcare institutions might start to go down a sort of slippery path, as they say, of trying to, you know, perhaps not exerting as much effort to save someone or rectify this damage that someone's incurred in order to, you know, save another life and be able to transplant an organ to someone else. Sue, that being said, I am a firm believer in organ donation, but would just like to hear about that.
Sue, thank you so much for your call. Dr. Sanghavi, your thoughts on that?
So I think that this is a common concern many people have, to say, oh, you know, if I'm even thinking about organ donation, maybe my doctors won't try as hard to save my loved one. And I think that there's a couple ways to handle this. The first is that hospitals are required to have two different medical teams, one that's involved in treating your family member, and it's an entirely separate team that would be the one that would handle the organ donation. And those actually never meet, sort of like church and state, so to speak. So it's only when the family has decided that they would like to either allow their loved one to die a normal death or natural death, or to withdraw the support, that they even are allowed to contact the team that discusses organ donation. So people are very cognizant of this. And what I would add to
let me ask you a quick question about that. Are they cognizant? Because I'm thinking that there may be certain circumstances where, you know, there is a patient who comes in completely unexpectedly, and in the midst of all the trauma and the worry and the activity in the emergency department, I mean, can a patient be trusted to make an informed decision at that time?
Mm-hmm. So that's a really good question. I think that what happens is that the organs are not donated in that type of situation where they're suddenly, you know, or that's not when it happens. It's usually in an intensive care unit or other place where a patient has been resuscitated, some testing has been done, the family has been talked to, and this is ideally done in a way which is much slower and allows a little bit more reflection before a decision is made.
I want to make a comment about, I think that the separation is a very important one, but also the assurance to the person who called, and I think it's an important point, that the injury is demonstrable. It's shown by radiographic evidence, by X-ray, that someone has a devastating injury, whether it be a tumor or stroke, bleed, trauma. the brain is injured, and this individual is not determined to be brain dead because they may still have some spontaneous respiration. But the conclusion is made after a very careful assessment that any further treatment would not reverse or restore this person to well-being. So that has to be demonstrated and validated and an assurance to the family that whatever treatment might be to be further done would indeed be futile. So it doesn't be a slippery slope in that regard. It becomes quite evident that any treatment further would indeed not be able to restore the person to well-being.
So if I might take a step back here and actually just place all of this in context in terms of a few numbers. I mean, there are over 100,000 people waiting for organ donations in the United States. I believe 3,500 right here in New England. And last year, there were just 200 donors in New England. So just a sense as to how great the need is. But also, you know, Dr. Delmonico, I hear you see. It seems to me that you're describing this as a rather cut and dry situation where people are declared dead. It's okay, move forward. But Dr. Sanghavi, I mean, in your piece that you wrote for the New York Times, you wrote that there isn't actually consensus amongst doctors of whether or not using cardiac death as a definition for eligibility for organ donation even exists. Why is there not consensus if it's so, you know, straightforward as Dr. Delmonico seems to be describing?
Right. So I think that the way to understand this is that we're dealing with really metaphysical questions to some extent. And by analogy, you say, well, when does life start? You know, some people, the Navajo, believe that it begins when your baby starts laughing. Roe versus Wade says it's at 24 weeks gestation. Several Catholics say that it starts at the moment of conception. And most people think about it in medicine at the moment of birth. So there's really, it has a lot to do with when you say, what exactly is it we're talking about? Similarly, what do we mean when we say death? So I think that it only makes sense that we can't agree because it is a very difficult concept. But I do see what Dr. Delmonico is saying is that there's not a lot of shades of gray when we're talking about the law. So the problem is that we're trying to square a circle here. We're taking something which is inherently very difficult to describe, and yet because of the way we work here, we need to create this barrier that says, yes, you're dead at this point, but suddenly at this point you're alive. I personally think that that is a simplification of reality, but I can see why we use that as a tool.
Well, there is a fundamental. The fundamental is that someone is dead, and the fundamental is that
Let me say this.
The fundamental is that there is a permanent absence of circulation and breathing, and that is a standard, legal, medically recognized determination of death.
Carrie Casey, I'm going to have the last word go to you because I understand that actually almost a third of organ donations in New England now are done using donation after cardiac death. You have been through it with your mother and God forbid that anyone else has to go through it, but we know some people will. What is your advice for those who are faced with this decision?
Sure. I think that it's something that people need to talk about with their families and friends now and make decisions so that families are comfortable knowing what their loved one wants. And, you know, I can't tell you how honored we are that my mom could be a hero and give life to other individuals. And we're just so thankful that we were given that opportunity by the hospital, and we wouldn't regret or change a bit of it.
Carrie Casey, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you.
And Dr. Francis Delmonico, Medical Director of the New England Organ Bank, thank you for being here as well.
Indeed.
And Dr. Darshak Sanghavi, Chief of Pediatric Cardiology at the UMass Medical School, thank you so much for coming in. There's more after a break. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.